Oh my gosh, an amazing view.
I'm Matt Podolsky. In 2022, I attempted to thru-hike the entire Appalachian Trail with my mom. Some of my favorite moments on the trail came in the early morning. I'd sneak out of camp before anybody else was awake and point my mini parabolic microphone, which looks like a tiny satellite dish, up at the trees, and just listen.
We've got oven birds calling, which obviously seem to be the loudest bird in the forest. Black and white warbler. I hear hooded warbler. Black-throated green warbler.
While I was walking, fellow hikers would often ask, "What's that big plastic dish attached to your pack?" Inevitably, we'd start talking about birds. People would ask me to ID birds they'd seen or heard, and before I knew it, I had a trail name, Birdman. Trail names are one of the ways thru-hikers like me shed our former lives and reinvent ourselves on the trail each year. It can be a way of escaping your past self or claiming an identity you've always wanted. On the Appalachian Trail, you can spend months getting close to someone, camping, eating, telling deep personal stories, and never know their real first name.
Yeah, that was totally unexpected. I just never met so many good people. Just the kindness, and totally unexpected.
But it's not just people who reinvent themselves on the Appalachian Trail. The landscape itself has changed, been reshaped and renamed over hundreds of years.
All of these places already had names, and all of that was just sort of whitewashed.
This is Common Land. In this episode, we explore some of the ways the trail transforms the people who hike it, and some of the efforts to recognize what the AT used to be before it became what it is now. Gil Jackson is a Cherokee language teacher and enrolled member of the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians. He thru-hiked the AT in 2014.
I gave myself a name, Do-Yi, which, you know, describes me anyway because I spent so much time outside, and that's what it means. Do-Yi means outside or outdoors.
Typically, trail names are given to a person by their fellow thru-hikers. They can come from anywhere. A funny story, a song, a favorite food. It's like a badge of honor. But for Gil, it was important that he pick his own trail name.
Because in this part of the country, when you're native, people will, you know, during the jobs I've had in the past, construction, whatever job, they holler at you, "Hey, chief, come here." But I will tell them, you know, I have a name, just like you do. And if I can remember your name, I think you can remember mine. It's not hard, three letters, you know, Gil. It's not chief. And I'm not chief. And probably never will be chief. So that's how I came about my name.
Some people hike the AT to get away from the grind of their daily lives. For Gil, it was a way to reconnect with his ancestors.
These were my reasons for hiking. I wanted to kind of experience the pain and suffering that my people went through during the removal. The big difference was I had a home to come back to when I finished. I mean, my home was still there. I wanted to feel what they felt. Although I was wearing high-tech shoes, ultralight backpack, a miniature stove, but I carried everything on my back, as you know how it's done. It was 2.5 times the distance of going to Oklahoma. It's about, you know, as you know, almost 2,200 miles. And as you very well know, it's a lot of suffering. And yeah, it's not easy, physically and mentally. I've always said, you know, I mean, if I'm sitting at the top of a mountain and I have a view, and if I'm sitting with somebody, I often say, just think, you know, this was our land at one time. All of this, all of it had to be on native land in the beginning.
Gil started his thru hike in mid-March of 2014. Like my mom and I, he started in Georgia on Springer Mountain.
And I started from the parking lot at 12:05 going north, and I did 17 miles by 7 o'clock that evening. So I was in good shape, I'm really good shape.
It took my mom and I 12 days to cover the same amount of terrain that Gil Jackson hiked in three.
If you travel with Gil Jackson in the mountains, you better be in top shape, because he doesn't slow down for anything, and he goes through some of the roughest places.
That's Lamar Marshall, a historian and friend of Gil Jackson. He's also a man who knows a thing or two about maps. When he was younger, he mapped 200 miles of the Trail of Tears.
I mapped these 200 miles of trails in Alabama, and they became recognized by the National Park Service and became part of the National Historic Trail System. So then my wife and I decided, let's get out of Alabama. We moved to North Carolina, into the mountains up here near Cherokee, and I went to the Cherokee tribe and talked with the cultural resources officers and different people. They said nobody has ever mapped the Cherokee Trail System in the East, and I said, well, I can do it if I'm funded.
And funded it was. Lamar spent 10 years mapping the historic Cherokee footpaths that crisscross southern Appalachia. And once he began working on this project, it was only a matter of time before he crossed paths with Gil Jackson.
Nobody in my age group right now, at 71 years old, can climb these mountains like I can. They can't take you there. And because they're not healthy enough and they're not physically fit, there's just times running out.
They made a good team, not just because they were both up to the job physically, but because they both wanted to preserve history that felt like it was slipping away with every passing year.
And, you know, one of the things I've been doing for the last probably 40 years is locating significant and sacred sites. It's like language, and those spots are being lost incredibly fast.
Now, this project didn't exclusively map areas that overlap with the Appalachian Trail, but many of them do, and the stories that they tell from this period are wild, and I mean wild.
I actually went on a trip with them to the Medicine Lake, to a sacred place in the mountains, and so we got on horseback and rode horseback up, way back up in this mountain to, I believe it was called Breakneck Ridge. And we had to leave our horses up there. Then we had to go cross country to this sacred place on the streams, and which we did. And it was a brutal hike down through a jungle of rhododendron and barely a trail in this thing. And we got down to where we were going, and it turned out it took a little longer than what we thought to get down there.
Gil Jackson and the group decided to take a different route back to where they left the horses. They followed a stream for several miles and began to climb a steep hillside.
Well, we started up the stream, and it started getting later and later. And I said, well, my only hope to get out of these mountains is going to be, I got my GPS, and I've got a waypoint on where the horses are. I'm walking along trying to keep up with Gil Jackson and these two Cherokees, who it's impossible to keep up with them. And I'm walking by a stream, and I slipped, and my GPS went flip, 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 and hit into this little tiny shallow pool of water. And I could see it there, and I got down and reached down there to get it, and it disappeared. And it just vanished. It's $500 GPS. And I called Gil, and then they all came back, and they went down the stream. We looked all around. We looked, and it's like, can't find it. It's gone. And so we had to venture on. Then I got no GPS. So we went up and we went. It started to get dark.
Eventually, they got back up the mountain, but they didn't know if the horses were to the left or to the right. Gil had them sit down and went off into the dark alone.
Finally, he hollered at us and And we had to crawl through the dark, stumble through the dark to get to the point where he was at. And there was the horses. There was pitch dark. I don't know how he found them. And then we rode out of the mountains in the dark. But it was like something out of the past. Spirits I'll never forget. And Gil told me, he said, Lamar, he said, you took that GPS down there, and that was a sacred place down there. The little people took your GPS, and that's the reason it disappeared.
I had told him early on, I said, Lamar, I don't think you're supposed to be doing this. And he said, no. I said, it's only going to be for natives. And I said, okay, you know, do what you need to do. And yeah, that's a pretty incredible story.
GPS or no GPS, and with the blessing and support of the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians, Marshall continued mapping Cherokee trails throughout southern Appalachia. But it wasn't just trail work. Marshall also spent countless hours poring over historic records and surveys. Some of the most important records that he found are from the period just before the forced removal of Cherokees in 1838.
In 1838, when W.G. Williams, with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, they sent in survey teams down here, and they disguised themselves as a speculators, maybe looking to buy land. Their object was to survey all the Cherokee trails and roads at this time in the mountains for two reasons. One was if the Indians resisted, they wanted to know where the roads were so they could send in the military and fight the Cherokees and round them up. Number two, if the Cherokees didn't fight, which they had no intention of, they wanted to know where the roads were so they could wagon them out and take them out of the mountains.
During his research, Lamar Marshall got his hands on the U.S. Army Corps of Engineer maps and road surveys from back in 1838.
Part of the modern Appalachian Trail is built on the same trail. So that's a documented section of trail that was actually a Cherokee trail that we can prove.
While on the Appalachian Trail, I became slightly obsessed with the idea that I might be walking on historic Cherokee trails. Not just around them, but actually on one. And just a few days before I got there, Marshall emailed to tell me about this one section, a ridgeline in the mountains of North Carolina. Well, the section that we're hiking now, this guy, Lamar Marshall, documented and like found enough evidence to say confidently that this is a former Cherokee footpath.
It's amazing to think about that.
I know, it doesn't look that different than most of the other sections of trail.
Right.
I wasn't looking to reinvent myself on the trail, not in a literal way, but as the weeks turned into months, I could feel something shifting inside me.
You can't get lost in despair because you're constantly surrounded by this beauty.
As someone who produces documentaries about wildlife and the environment, it's easy to feel overwhelmed by everything that's going on in the world right now. I'm constantly grappling with feelings of helplessness and frustration in the face of environmental issues.
The climate crisis and racial and wealth inequality and corruption in our government, the war going on in Ukraine right now, all these things. You can still get bogged down by those. And I still think about all those things a lot while I'm hiking on trail, but all of those thoughts are paired with the things that I see every single time I look up.
Birds. This is what I saw every time I looked up. And each morning, I was treated to a symphony of birdsong. It's no surprise I was given the trail name Birdman. Each day that I was out on the trail, I would notice a few new bird species that had just arrived on their spring breeding grounds.
I was woken up a little after 6 o'clock by a veery. It sang maybe 3 or 4 times, real close, really loud, and then moved off into the distance, and I was able to get out of my tent, grab the recorder, and follow it a little bit and get a few recordings with the parabola.
In my own way, I was building a connection with this landscape. It was about more than just the birds. Being on the trail allowed me to pay a different kind of attention to the world around me.
The leaves on the trees are just starting to poke out, and so the colors that I see are just bright, bright green, almost yellow. And it's amazing because just a few weeks ago, the forest floor was just covered in dead leaves, and there was no green whatsoever. And in just a couple of weeks, everything has come alive. It's just a sea of green.
We'll be back with more about the Appalachian Trail after a quick break. Hey there, adventurers. Are you ready to hit the trail this season? If so, check out Big Agnes, the mother of comfort. Whether you're backpacking, car camping, or sleeping under the stars in your backyard, Big Agnes gear is built for comfort without compromise. Their award-winning sleeping bags, pads, and tents are lightweight, durable, and feel like home, no matter where you roam. Say goodbye to cold, stiff nights, and hello to plush, cozy sleep in the wild or your backyard. Find Big Agnes at an outdoor retailer near you or at bigagnes.com and feel the difference. Big Agnes, comfort built for the backcountry. We're back. I'm Matt Podolsky, and this is Common Land, a show about the Appalachian Trail. The section of the AT that overlapped directly with an ancient Cherokee footpath was not an easy climb. In fact, it almost certainly was the steepest and most rugged part of the trail that my mom and I had encountered thus far.
It's all slanted. It's like the trail's just cut into the side of the mountain here.
The steep, rugged terrain continued as my mom and I approached the Great Smoky Mountains. Here, we would climb the tallest peak on the entire Appalachian Trail, a mountain that since 1859 has been known as Clingman's Dome.
Clingman's Dome was named after Thomas Clingman, who was a U.S. senator from North Carolina.
That's Levita Hill, a member of the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians. She's one of the people who worked to restore the original Cherokee name for this sacred mountain, Kuohi.
Clingman's Dome is in our backyard. It is a sacred mountain to our people. It has, it's historically referenced as where our medicine men went to pray, since it is the highest peak locally. It's also where they gathered food, specifically the mulberries. Kuohi means the mulberry place, so that's what the original Cherokee name is about. We're saying let's restore its original Cherokee name, which it had for hundreds, thousands of years prior to it actually being renamed Clingman's Dome.
My mom and I reached the peak of Kuohi in April of 2022. A Park Service road leads tourists to the top of Kuohi, and on the summit is a large concrete observation tower. A large crowd of people milled about at the top.
I don't think I've ever seen a tower quite like this.
I know, right? Like a crazy long concrete pathway that circles around. Interesting. Well, this is as high up as we'll get on the whole trail.
Yeah.
At 6,643 feet, Kuohe is the highest peak on the entire Appalachian Trail. Its summit is entirely forested, so you have to climb to the top of the observation tower to get views of the surrounding area.
What would you say, like 40, 50 people on this structure right now?
Yeah. Mountains everywhere.
Yeah.
Some of them are pretty well off.
Whenever we're up there, when we're visiting, there are a lot of people visiting, and it is a beautiful place. We have to acknowledge that it is. It's just a very powerful place in the sense that it's just so vast. It's so huge and beautiful. But you're sort of just looking at nature and the beauty of it without recognizing that this is the homeland of the Cherokee people. It's sort of like that has been wiped away, I guess. If you're there, there's a very tiny sign that says, you know, this is the homeland of the Cherokee people. And it talks about how it is important to us, but it's really easy to overlook that. And so it's easy to be up there on Clingman's Dome and not recognize this as Cherokee homeland.
I love the idea that long-distance hiking can help you reframe the past or envision a new future. But I also know that reinvention isn't always a good thing. In the case of this mountain, a peak that was renamed and reinvented by white settlers, La Vida wanted to see its original identity restored.
Restoring the name Kuohe will bring that educational piece back to the mountain, which it desperately needs. It will also recognize that the Cherokee people were here way before Columbus, way before the first settlers, way before DeSoto, any of them. We've always been here.
Kuohe isn't just sacred to the Cherokee people because of mulberries they gathered here. When President Jackson began the forced removal of native peoples, this mountain was a sanctuary.
This is the place that sort of saved the Eastern Band from having to move to Oklahoma. This is where they hid. This is where they took shelter. And this is also where a lot of them died because of the harsh conditions of having to go hide there in the mountain. I think for a long time, I sort of just thought, oh, our people ran into the mountains and hid and no one could find them. Well, that's part of it, but it wasn't that simple. They really endured a whole lot to keep us here. So for me now, whenever I travel up the mountain, whenever I'm at Kuohe, it's like it's so much more meaningful. Like there's power there. There's the remembrance of what's gone before us and like truly who we are, who I am. And it's special.
When I recorded this interview back in 2022, this mountain was still officially called Clingman's Dome. But Levita Hill and fellow activist Mary Crow were making good progress gathering support to return it to its original name.
Somehow, Tom Clingman, the great-great-nephew of Thomas Clingman, he reached out to our principal chief, and we've been in contact. He supports our calls. So the family of Thomas Clingman is in support of restoring the name. He thinks it's great. He thinks it's honorable and that it should happen.
In September 2024, the U.S. Board of Geographic Names approved their proposal. The Appalachian Trail's tallest peak is once again officially known as Kuohe. Meanwhile, my mom and I were about 6 weeks into our hike. We had finally found our hiking legs. Our bodies were starting to adapt to life on the trail.
So how are you feeling about the hike in general at this point? We're what? Almost 400 miles in?
I'm looking forward to Virginia, just because I know it's going to be different.
Mm.
But I feel good.
Yeah.
You see that?
Yeah. Ooh. All right.
Don't hit us.
No.
So is this ready?
Yeah, should be.
Somewhere along the way, my mom had been given her trail name too. Candy is what people outside of this alternate universe call her. But on the trail, she became known as Chili Pepper Woman. This is on account of the giant bag of dried chili peppers that she carried on the trail. Every hiker that we passed was offered a handful of hot peppers.
If you had told me this morning that I was going to do 16 miles, I would have told you you're crazy.
It was our last night on trail before taking a few days off, so our food supply was running low. Trail food isn't always that great, and my mom and I were forced to get creative.
Yeah, that's good, right? No? You don't think so?
It's weird. It's just weird.
Well, it's rehydrated eggs. I mean, what do you expect?
I didn't know what to expect. I'm not complaining. I'm hungry.
Look at all the beans down there.
Oh, I gotta get some of those.
My mom and I had hiked nearly 400 miles. We had climbed to the summits of 5 of the 6 tallest peaks on the entire Appalachian Trail. But we still had 1,800 miles ahead of us, an inconceivable distance. It seemed like we would be walking forever. Next time on Common Land.
Yesterday, it was probably the first day where I was really seriously thinking about wanting to get off trail, you know, and like questioning the whole thing.
Common Land is produced by the Wildlands Collective. This season is produced in partnership with New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm your host, Matt Podolsky. Music is by Blue Dot Sessions. To check out the next episode in the series, search for Common Land in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To learn more about the show and see a full list of credits, go to commonlandpodcast.com.